Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, we got the War on I-4 basketball edition. South Florida visiting UCF in the first round of the NIT tournament. Not the one they wanted, but certainly one that I think they're going to show up for. We're going to have a chance to break it down for you and the Bulls' incredible basketball season with Joey Knight, Tampa Bay Times beat reporter at Times, also helps me out with the Bucks, and he will be at UCF in Orlando tonight. So we'll talk about the Bulls, what they have done this season, just a remarkable year that it still continues in the postseason, which is not something you can say about USF basketball, men's basketball, very often. So we'll get into that here in just a minute. First, I want to start with some news on the Buccaneers free agency front. So, you know, we remember that they traded Carlton Davis to the Detroit Lions, and that created sort of a void at cornerback, which we know will be filled by Zion McCallum, but the Bucs still needed to, you know, get some depth that they continue to build in the secondary. And to that extent, they signed another cornerback who I think is an interesting player. It's Tavier Thomas, signed a one-year deal from the Houston Texans. This guy was a free agent and somebody that's going to compete, I think, at the nickel position with Christian Isian, who they like a lot. I mean, Christian did some great things, even week one against Minnesota Vikings with a big interception, pretty good hitter himself. But Thomas is 28 years old. He was undrafted. He played for Houston last season. He only played in 9 games. He started 5. He had 51 tackles, 30 of those solos, a couple of forced fumbles. But he ended up going on injury reserve with a hamstring injury, which cost him some games. But if you look at sort of what the Bucs have done in the secondary, you know, since they made the trade to Davis, you know, to get the Jets' Bryce Hall, who I think will be sort of that third corner and that guy that will, you know, back up both corner positions a little bit, you know, what we saw a year ago because there were so many injuries to Carlton Davis or Jamel Dean, and you saw that with Zion McCallum. I think that's sort of what Bryce will be, maybe even play at times some nickel corner as well. And then, of course, you know, the biggest signing, I think, for their secondary was Jordan Whitehead. I mean, getting that safety back that they had drafted that was here for 4 years, part of their Super Bowl team. He comes back from the Jets really as a better player because he was forced to sort of play more center field. He improved his ball skills. I mean, just by comparison, I know it's different positions, but if you look at like a guy like Carlton Davis, who is a $20 million a year player at corner, now, I think he has 7 career interceptions, and already Jordan Whitehead has 6. And they came primarily with the Jets. In fact, he had 3 on opening day against Josh Allen a year ago when Aaron Rodgers went down after just 4 plays and just managed to win because he just took the game over. So I think from a secondary standpoint, yes, you're going to miss Carlton Davis. No question when he's healthy and motivated, he's one of the best corners in the league. He's a guy that can travel with your best receiver. He's going to help the Lions if, and it's a big if, he can stay healthy, and that's been his biggest problem. That and the fact that he doesn't have great ball skills, and that's an understatement. Makes a lot of plays, knocks the ball away, doesn't intercept it very much. I think too with Thomas, you know, it's interesting because sometimes when you play against teams, they remember you if you have a good day. He had a really good day against the Bucs when they went down to Houston. They lost 39-37 with that comeback by C.J. Stroud. But he led the team that day with 10 tackles, and he had 6 solo stops, and he had 1 tackle for loss. So that sort of thing kind of sticks out. He's 5'10", 205 pounds. You know, he's entered the league as an undrafted free agent. He's a make-it guy in 2018 with the Cardinals out of tiny little Ferris State. So, you know, 3 seasons with the Browns, 3 more with the Texans. And like I said, you know, had the hamstring injury a year ago, but seems to be fine now. So good signing for the Bucs. a little more depth on defense. I don't think they're done necessarily. I could see them possibly looking maybe for an outside linebacker to add some pass rush help after losing Shaq Barrett. It's possible maybe they get that veteran receiver because Russell Gage isn't going to be back. So there's still some pieces, and they can always create more cap room. Last time I checked, they were about $9.9 million under the salary cap. But, you know, obviously you still want to, you know, take the franchise tag off of Antoine Winfield Jr., maybe extend Tristan Wirfs. If you do those two things, you're going to create a lot of cap room for yourself, and they still can do that and sign some more free agents if they want to. But pretty good job by Jason Light all the way around, now focusing on building some depth for their defense and for their secondary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, a great season by USF men's basketball. No NCAA tournament berth. However, their season does continue, and that will be tonight at UCF, University of Central Florida, in the first round of the 32-team NIT. Tip-off is 9 p.m., and a guy that we know also well that covers USF for us and has for years, as many, many other things, is Joey Knight, and he joins us now. Joey, I want to get to where they're at and how they got here a little bit, but I also just wanted to get your thoughts because we haven't had a chance to really discuss what, look, has been an unbelievable season and a surprise, I think, for most of the college basketball world. And that's the job that Amir Abdur-Rahim has done with this basketball team in his first season. I don't know that anybody foresaw this. Perhaps he did. He brought some players, obviously, with him. But when you consider where this program was just a year ago and many years before that, how kind of unlikely is it that we're sitting here even talking about a team playing in the postseason right now?
Rick, I never saw this coming. And I think any Bulls fan who would tell you they saw this coming 24-7, an American Athletic Conference regular season title in Abdur-Rahim's first year would be lying through their teeth.
Right.
You know, he won the press conference, and that's become almost cliche when he was hired last March. And he had a kind of a breakthrough season at Kennesaw State, where he came from, after winning one game his first year. He was there, I believe, 4 years, and just the program gradually got better, and they won their conference and made the NCAA tournament. So he was it was a feel good story, and he was a hot coach at the time because of what he had done, his body of work at Kennesaw. But still, you know, like most any other place these days in modern day college basketball, he had to rebuild the roster, because when you have a coaching transition, half the team, 2/3 of the team hits the portal. I mean, Monday was the first day that the transfer portal opened for college basketball, and you got hundreds of names in there already. So he was going to have an overhauled roster, just like Brian Gregory inherited when he took over for Orlando Antigua. He had to completely rebuild the roster. Abdur-Rahim almost had to do the same thing. I think he had three holdovers. And he brought some guys with him from Kennesaw, some veteran guys who had been with him from the very beginning. And if you want to point to how this all worked, I think that's the one thing, Rick. He brought some guys who had played a lot of college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Youngblood from Kennesaw, who became the conference's co-player of the year. Brandon Stroud came with him from Kennesaw. Two or three other guys came with him. Kobe Knox, as we all know, the Tampa Catholic kid. He had played some college basketball at Grand Canyon, had some NCAA tournament experience there. Other guys like Cason Pryor, the big man, who's kind of become a cult favorite, if you will. Jose Placer came from North Florida. he brought in a lot of guys who had played a ton of college basketball. So while this was a new team, it was a new team comprised of veteran guys. But still, I don't think anybody saw coming what would transpire over the ensuing months. Anybody who saw them at the outset when they lost to Central Michigan or lost to UMass, you know, kind of had the, okay, this is the same old South Florida. This is going to take some time. But those veteran guys congealed. And most importantly, they bought into what Amir was selling. He's big on culture and trust. Trust me, he had to establish trust with those Kennesaw kids after they won only one game his first year. And I don't think he had any roster turnover there. So whatever he's selling behind the scenes, their kids are buying. And I think a lot of it is just they don't know, you know, I'm going to flub up the saying, but it's all about how much you care. They don't care how much you know until
they know how much you care.
They know how much you care. That's a big thing with him. And I think just establishing that kind of culture of we care about y'all. We care about y'all as if y'all were our own kids. Trust us. This will work. Again, whatever he sold those kids, they bought and they gelled, they congealed. And again, they were veteran players that played a lot of college basketball. They got those first initial big wins under their belt and they were off to the races because that forged confidence. So you had culture and confidence and there was no stopping them.
It's unbelievable to watch them play and enjoy. I think I watched this game the night that maybe things turned around. I don't know, but they're down by 20 points at Memphis. I mean, 20 points on the road at a really good program like Memphis at the time. You're thinking there's no way they're going to come back. And they did. They came back and they won that game. And I don't think they lost again until the last game of the regular season. I mean, it's an incredible run to put together that many wins in a row. They got on a roll there. And you talk about confidence. That game had to have been a big booster for them.
No question. I remember that night. Memphis was kind of snowed in and there weren't many people in the arena. They had to, you know, as a matter of fact, Memphis kind of advised its fans, stay home.
Icy
conditions. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to my boss, Tracy Johnson, and, you know, we were talking about, does the Associated Press even have a writer there? Are we going to be able to get anything in the paper? And I'm watching the game, and lo and behold, they stage this rally, and I called her, and I said, I'll write it. We got to write this. This is one of the biggest wins in USF history, and it was at the time. Memphis was number 10 in the country. Yeah. But again, you know, that forged confidence, that kind of comeback. And when you've got veteran guys like that who have been through that kind of adversity, who have, you know, just faced deficits like that and have been in holes and have come back, you know, it's confidence. It's no panic. It's poise. And that's what this team has. And as they beat Memphis and they had some other big rallies, Rick.
Yeah, they did.
You know, I believe it was Rice. They were down about 12 points in the second half. Charlotte, the home game on a Tuesday night in the Yingling Center, they were down by at least 10 at halftime. Well, these guys were undeterred, again, because they're veterans, because they had been in that situation and proven in themselves that they could come back. And again, you know, when you've got that kind of confidence and that kind of poise and that kind of veteran, you know, those kind of veterans who've been through the fires, there's no stopping him, and there wasn't. And it's incredible. Again, but I'm still amazed, Rick, because it was a brand new team. It was a collection of guys from all over the country who had never played together before. They had all played a lot of basketball on their own, but not together. And the way they just congealed is amazing.
Yeah, no, it's a story in basketball that's pretty rare, even by today's, you know, transfer portal stories and things that you hear, but a program that had not had any history for so long and not had any success to come together the way they did. And you mentioned this, Chris Youngblood. I think it's always great to have the guy who's in control of the game also be your guard, you know, kind of control it, you know, from the backcourt like that. But he, and we'll discuss the final game of the tournament, maybe until then, at least. But he was always unflappable in that respect. Like, he was clutch. The games that I watched, if things started to get a little out of hand, he calmed it down. And you know, to their style of play, they didn't really care who was the hero, right? You had guys coming off the bench, whether it was, you know, Celton Miguel. I mean, it didn't really matter who was it that night. It seemed like it was a different guy. But the constant was Youngblood, and that's why he was the co-player of the year in the conference. That dude was just – he was icing his – I mean, he kind of – I think if there's a sort of a you know, a culture that you can transfer from the coach to your team, he did it through Youngblood. That was his guy, it felt like.
That's why I would been really interested to see what kind of damage this team could have done in the NCAA tournament. Because when you get to this level, Rick, and you know as well as I do, give me a good backcourt and they can do a lot of damage. And and just sticking in the state of Florida theme, and you covered some of these teams. Remember Florida, you know, Moten and Maxwell back in the 80s and That's Dan right. Cross and Craig Brown. And, you know, you got Chris Youngblood and this freshman, Jaden Reed, who's just outstanding, who gave them just probably an overachieving season. Amir said Jaden Reed should be the freshman of the year, you know, in our league. They had the goods in the backcourt. But back to your point about the unselfishness, you know, They had no one near the top of the American Athletic Conference scoring leaders. Chris Youngblood, right. as good as he was, averaged 15 points. He was a leading scorer. And you go down the line, you had a couple other guys average double figures, and one averaged 9, one averaged 7. It was very balanced, and that's another thing that made them dangerous. Incredible assist-to-turnover ratio. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, in one of their I believe it was the conference quarterfinal game against East Carolina, an incredible assist turnover ratio, and I think they finished with like 28 field goals on 20 assists. Very unselfish unit, and again, it goes back to what Abdur-Rahim is selling these guys in the locker room behind the scenes, because whatever he was preaching, whatever he was sermonizing, they were buying, baby, because they bought in all the way, and you see the results.
Yeah, I think it captured finally the fandom followed, right? The more they won, 10, 11, 12, you got to 13. To see, and Joey, you've been to a lot of games, to see the Yuengling Center and to feel that atmosphere, a college basketball madhouse, if you will, for at least the last 3 home games that they sold out. What was that like? I mean, if for you who have been there when there wasn't anybody there, that had to be incredible, right? Like it was, in fact, what big time college basketball is about.
It was surreal, and it made you think what the possibilities are in this market because they won and the fans came out. And we haven't been able to say that about every sport at USF, but
true.
In this particular time, in this particular sport, the fans came out. They were given an entertaining product, and it was unlike anything I've ever seen in that building. And, you know, Abdur-Rahim, one of his messages after their loss in the conference semifinals, you know, I'm paraphrasing, he said, this is just the beginning, you know.
Right.
And you think about it, I don't think they lost anybody in the portal today. Wow. And this was a big day because NIT teams that are not in the NCAA tournament, they were losing portal guys. If they can keep this group intact,
oh boy,
you know, we can have that same kind of atmosphere. I don't know if on an every game basis, but certainly on a regular basis, if they can somehow keep this core nucleus together, they're going to be a favorite in their conference, and that place could be rocking. So the possibilities down the line are very exciting for this program, and I have not seen anything like it. I saw Iron Maiden there in 1988, and it wasn't rocking the way that place was.
I love it. Iron Maiden and then USF men's basketball. So, you know, the other thing that we don't know is, and this is yet to be determined because I don't even know how many, you know, roster spots they'll have available through attrition or graduation or anything like that. But, hey, man, nothing like a recruiting tool like the season you've just had. I mean, all of a sudden, USF becomes viable for maybe players that a year ago they would never even look this way.
Oh, no question. And it's a good question how many roster spots they'll have. They honored 3 guys on senior night that, you know, we're fairly certain that they've played their last game. One of them, Selton Miguel, the second leading scorer who and the sixth man of the year in the league. So I don't know how they're going to work those numbers or manipulate those numbers and how many guys they can bring in. But yeah, you've got the tool there. I go back and I think of football. And when you walk into that football office to this day, what's the first photo you see? That sold out Raymond James Stadium for that West Virginia game,
never
that night game.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you see. Now you can put up the same thing when recruits walk into the Muma Center. Look at this. This is what it's like. This was what it was like for our last three home games and what it can be like again. And I'll just, to go off on a little tangent here, Rick, I'll give some credit to Michael Kelly. He's being very proactive. As one might suspect, Abdur Rahim's name has come up for some of these Power Five vacancies. And Michael Kelly told me Monday after the Board of Trustees meeting, hey, discussions are already underway. The wheels are in motion to revise or rework the contract of not only Abdur Rahim, but Alex Golish, the football coach. He said, we understand how valuable those guys are to our program, and discussions are underway. They signed 6-year deals, you know, when they, those are pretty aggressive contracts when they joined USF. But credit to Michael Kelly for being proactive and realizing, you know, people are going to come after my guys. I may have to sweeten the pot a little bit more, and they're making attempts to do that right now.
And that'll be the hardest thing they face. Obviously, I really thought that, you know, with the job, that Rahim did, it could be one and done. I mean, they easily could have a bunch of Power 5-6 conferences, you know, teams in there go, listen, what about that dude? You know, like, right. I mean, look at the climb he made at USF. What if we got him? And that will always be, you know, sort of the case until or unless USF becomes that destination school. But in the case of whether it's men's basketball or Alex Golish, I think they want to make this one of those. I think they're driven a little differently than some. We'll see. I mean, look, at the end of the day, money talks, right? And opportunity and all of that. And they want to improve their lot. But by the same token, I think that they certainly seem committed to and see the possibilities Golish certainly has of what this could be here. You know, now basketball, we're not used to it, right? Because we're not used to Florida necessarily being the quintessential basketball state. Although if you look around the SEC or the ACC or some other conferences, you'll find great basketball players from Florida everywhere. Yeah. And that's just the way that goes. But yeah, Michael Kelly is, I mean, you couldn't go a better 2-for-2 in the major sports as far as men's basketball and football go in one solid year. I wanted to talk to you, though, a little bit about, you know, what happened at the end of the year. You know, their final regular season game, I think, was at Tulsa, and they stubbed their toe there, and they break the winning streak or whatever. Not a huge deal, although maybe, and I don't know this, but, like, was there even a chance that if they didn't win the conference tournament, they won the regular season championship, that they would have had a chance anyway based on strength of schedule and different things? Perhaps not. But anyway, they lose that game. And I think at that point, even you, Joey, said that they're going to have to win their conference tournament most likely to get into the NCAAs.
Right.
And, of course, they didn't do that. The thing that bothered me, and you probably know this team because they lost to them earlier this season, is just watching the UAB game. And it got muddied up. And I think that's what UAB wanted to do, the physicality of that game, you know, the provocation at times, the hard fouls. And that's the one game I thought they played into UAB's hands a little too much, and especially that sequence when, you know, they tie it up after being down, and then Youngblood, you know, gets the technical, and then maybe a flagrant foul that goes with it. And it seemed like they took about 4 free throws and the ball, and they got the separation. I just think that if there was a time, the games, and I didn't see every game, but down the stretch I watched all of them, and I thought that was the one time that they looked like they lost their poise. They got out of character. They weren't playing their kind of basketball.
No, I agree with that to a point, Rick. No question about it. I think there was a little bit of that. As for the officiating, I think it was egregious at some points. I think the ESPN crew that called the game agreed. If you listen to the broadcast,
I just think too many fouls. They just didn't let anything go, or is that what you mean?
Well, too many fouls and too many they called four technical fouls, and to this day, I still don't know what the technical on Chris Youngblood was over. I've got it right here. There were 20 fouls called on UAB and 21 called on USF. So
that's a lot of whistles.
Yeah, that made for 52 free throws, a lot of whistles, four technical fouls. So, you know.
And the technicals, to your point, that's a momentum, complete momentum killer, or momentum, you know, shifts to the other sideline. Because like I said, USF had fought back. They're in the game. And then you get this series of technicals on Youngblood and then fouls and then the parade to the free throw line. Before you know it, you're down five and they have the ball.
No question. That what you're talking about turned out to be a 6-point possession for UAB. So
exactly.
Yeah, they let things get away from them from that perspective. And the other thing is, if there was one vulnerability on this USF team, and I just thought they were balanced and deep and strong and just about everything, but where they were vulnerable was in the front court when it came to facing a big, burly, low post guy.
Yeah.
Because USF has Cason Pryor. He's 6'10", but he's not real thick. He's a lean guy. And you get in there against a big, burly, like 6'9", 230, 240-pound guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he can assert his will. And that's what Yaxel Lindeborg for UAB did. You know, their big man, he ended up being, I believe, the MVP for the tournament.
Yeah, he was great.
You know, he had a double-double. And that's what I was worried about with USF if they got in the tournament. If you had to face a guy like Edie from Purdue or Armando Bacot from North Carolina, they faced that kind of guy, they were probably going to be in trouble. So not only kind of losing their composure, letting things get away from them in key spots, but also just their vulnerability to a big imposing front court. And that's what UAB had. And we saw the result.
Yeah. Well, I know it was disappointing, but I don't think you were surprised. And obviously they had every right to be disappointed and they said what they said, but they also had an opportunity to get there. They had an opportunity to win the conference tournament. It's got to be tough to, you know, to almost virtually go just about wire to wire and win the regular season and then, you know, watch two other teams get to the big dance. Be that as it may, you know, they didn't beat Texas A&M like some of the other schools did, right? And so so their reward, if you will, is the NIT. And not just the NIT, but explain to me now, they did something where, you know, UCF, which is 17-15, but of course they're in a Big 12 now.
Right.
So just on the surface, like it used to be the NIT would say, okay, where can we get the best crowd? That's the team that's at home. Mm-hmm. How did USF end up being on the road for this game?
It's because of the way the NIT has changed its selection criteria, which is skewed almost exclusively in favor of the major conferences. Let me see if I can try to explain this.
Right.
So the top two teams from each power conference that did not make the tournament, the top two teams in terms of net ranking, get an automatic bid and a host bid. So UCF was in that mix. Actually, the top two teams from the Big 12 that didn't make the tournament in terms of net rankings were Cincinnati and Oklahoma. Mm. Okay, Oklahoma declined. They said, we don't want to play in the
NIT.
That's
right. Yeah.
So who was next up in line? UCF. So UCF gets that automatic bid and that host site. And that's why USF at 24-7 is going, you know, across the state tonight to play at UCF, which is 17-15 at 9 o'clock on ESPN+.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, and they certainly have built a following, how many USF fans will make that jaunt, the kind of the war on I-4 in basketball this time. And the tip off is at 9 PM. So that'll be interesting. You know, here's the thing, Joey. Some teams look at the NIT as, you know, it really doesn't matter. You know, like, so what? We didn't make the NCAAs. We're disappointed. We'll go play this. Okay, fine. We'll go. But really, our goal was the other tournament.
Right.
And some teams look at it as, you know what? We still have stuff to prove. They made a mistake. we're not going to lay down. We're going to try to win this thing anyway. Which approach do you think that the Bulls will have when they get in front of UCF tonight?
Well, a program that hasn't been in postseason play in a half decade, I think is just itching to be in any type of postseason play. And especially, I think this group, they entered the conference tournament with a chip on their shoulder, and I don't think that chip has gone away. They want to prove to the country that the selection committee made a mistake.
Yeah.
Hey, we're a regular season conference champion. We won 15 games in a row.
Yeah.
By God, we're going to go out and show the nation, you know, who we are, and you know that we were snubbed and spurned by the selection committee. And I said this publicly, Rick. The NIT comes down to one prevailing factor: which teams want to be there and want to play.
I agree.
And we find that out real quickly. And the teams that, you know, that want to be there and take this seriously and want to keep playing, they're the ones who are going to be at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis for the NIT Final Four. And I have no doubt in my mind that USF is going into this tournament wanting to play, driven, something to prove, and they certainly have the talent and the depth to win this whole thing. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah. Well, I want to see them keep playing because I think that they're just a fascinating story, and they play a terrific brand of basketball where they share the ball, they do everything the right way, and there's no reason to think that, you know what, wouldn't be bad to see them at Madison Square Garden in the big lights of New York City. And what the heck, you want some spotlight on your, yeah, it's the NIT, but why not go further? So Joey Knight will be there. It's a 9 p.m. tip off. Boy, they didn't do any favors there, Joey.
I'm going to take a nap right now.
Yeah, you better. And I don't know if you plan on coming home after that game, but safe travels on I-4, my man.
Appreciate it,
buddy. That hour. Hopefully you won't get any traffic jams, but check them out on the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, I'm going to have to stay up late. This might be past our podcast time. I'm not sure what we're going to do with this, but USF traveling to UCF for the first round of the NIT. That game tips off at 9 p.m. on ESPN+. And I do have ESPN+, which I was thrilled the other night because that's where the Florida Lightning game was on. And speaking of the Lightning, they will be at Las Vegas to take on the Golden Knights. So you got USF coming on at 9, and then the Tampa Bay Lightning coming on at 10, right? Yep. Is that how it's going to go for your program?
Yep. Then you got the first four of the NCAA tournament starting tonight at 6:40, I believe. So you'll have doubleheader there.
Beautiful thing, man. Yeah. Virtual cornucopia of television sports, right?
Yes. Now, your CBI tournament, your Arkansas State Red Wolves don't play till Saturday, so you're off the hook.
Well, we're in the scouting phase of things, and you know, I say this, that there's 68 teams in the NCAA tournament, 32 in the NIT. Hey, man, we're an elite group of 15, okay? So when you can make that 15, then you're one of 15. That's all I got to say. So we'll see if the Red Wolves can advance. They haven't been to the postseason, by the way, in 25 years. And, yes, that's probably longer than I've been out of college, or not as long as I've been out of college. Let me think about that. Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter. I don't remember them in the postseason when I was there. So it's been a very long time. And they may be one and done. They might not. We'll see. But there are three postseason tournaments going on here at once, and we can check all of those out. But anyway, for all your coverage, of course, of USF and beyond, and of course, the Bucks, if they do anything, check us out at TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks for listening, everybody. For Steve Bursnick, my thanks to Joey Knight. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.